I honestly, like,
This is an interesting narrative.
I mean, that was my first theory, is just like Grimes really wants to go to space, and Elon Musk was probably being horny in her DMs, and she's like, this is my chance.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Indie Heads podcast. I am your host, Alex, filling in for Maddie. I was going to say that my name is Big Strong Man of Great Muscular Power, but unfortunately I can't because I'm doing the introduction. With me tonight we have Zach, or
Hi.
Waffle113 on Twitter.
And that's correct.
Jackson?
Yes, hello.
At Horse Jeans on Twitter.
Happy to be here.
We're doing this real late at night. It's, or at least my time. Oh, and Zach's. It's 10:48. Yeah.
It's still kind of late out where I am. West Coast boys out here.
Are you sure this isn't Jackson's evil twin?
we are not 100% positive that this is not my evil twin, Cowslax. It cannot be confirmed nor denied. Let's just get started. We have some news, we have some single alerts, we got and two real good main topics to talk about. So I'm excited for this episode. It's gonna be a good one.
It's gonna be kinda weird. Like, I feel like this is a weird cast combination, but we're gonna do this thing.
It's a weird energy, but I like it.
Yeah, I don't think I've been on a podcast with both of you at once, let alone like a podcast
just
both of you.
It was supposed to happen a few months ago, I think, but that never came into existence.
Probably I bailed, right?
Yeah. I would say like 1/3 of all like times we try to schedule the podcast, it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
So like, just imagine, take the number of episodes we have and like triple it, and that's how many times we've tried to schedule an episode of the podcast.
Yeah, I feel like we plan to pod like 1 to 2 times a week, and then do a podcast like once a month.
Hey, we did the last one like 2 weeks ago. This is
that's true. We do our podcast fortnightly. All right.
Let's move into
the news. Our first point of discussion is Scott Hutchison of Frightened Rabbit was found dead, at the age of 36. I don't know if you guys have too much to say about this, but I've been listening to them a lot, and to give like a 2-sentence eulogy, Scott Hutchison wrote life-affirming anthems about how life is miserable and how it's incredibly awkward to be a person. He found levity in serious darkness without dismissing the heaviness of what he was discussing. And just like, I don't know, I guess more like info on this would be that it was like a clear suicide, and a lot of people have been talking about like how it's kind of changed the context of some of his songs, in which he did talk about killing himself but found like a hopefulness in that, and I don't think it should necessarily be that way. Like, he kind of like won the battle against depression for like 36 years. So I don't know. I don't think you should look at it like that necessarily. It's a terrible loss. But
I would not call myself like a big fan of his music or anything, but it just, anytime you lose someone and like their whole like musical history kind of was about the thing that ended up being their undoing, it's kind of this weird, tricky thing where like some people might have difficulty listening to his music and things like that. But I definitely agree with you that like he was clearly making music as a way to try to attack this thing, and in the process he made a lot of people feel better. And even if he passed away, like that doesn't make those attempts to like fight against it not valid and important, and it makes them actually, I think, more important.
That's a really good way to put it. I've actually found his music like really comforting since like I don't know, since like a couple days after he passed. At first it really freaked me out because I've like struggled with like similar things, and like Scott really seemed to have like a positive outlook, and he just like disappeared into the night, and it really fucked me
It's
up for a
tough.
couple of days. But
It's really, really, really tough.
yeah,
But
there's
in much.
like
Go ahead, Zach.
there's not really a whole lot to say because what is there to say? But there is something that I wanted to point out. Like, ever since we found out, everyone's been pointing to this lyric from Head Rolls Off, the one that goes, "While I'm alive, I'll make tiny changes to the earth." And that's what he did.
Yeah.
But there's this one I find more accurate. I think it comes from this song called The Oil Slick. And it goes, "There's love, but it's misery loves you. Still got hope, so I think we'll be fine in these disastrous times." And I think that's what Scott made music for. These
Yeah.
finding hope in awful times, and that's what he provided for so many people. That's really all I can say because I don't listen to as much Frightened Rabbit as I probably should, but this really fucking hurts. I don't know what else to say.
Yeah. If you haven't gotten if you haven't like listened to a Frightened Rabbit album and are feeling interested, Midnight Organ Fight is a great place to start. Really like seminal indie album from the last decade. Yeah, I don't know. It stay safe. In lighter news,
Yeah, all right.
Mitski has
Look,
announced a new album.
there's no good transition out of that news story. So let's just talk
Yeah.
about the new Mitski is back. She's back, and she's announced a new album along with a new single that we will talk about in Single Alert. But we'll kind of save the discussion of Geyser for that. But generally, like, what are your guys' like expectations and thoughts about what's it called? What's Be Your Own Cowboy? Oh, Be the
Be
Cowboy.
the Cowboy. So I'm not a big Mitski fan. I tried really hard to get into Puberty 2 and it just didn't click for me. And mostly I just have thoughts about her cover art, so I'm gonna let you guys talk this one out for a little bit.
I think I'm definitely the biggest Mitski fan of the three of us. I've seen her live. I own lots of her merchandise. I'm a pretty huge fan of her as a songwriter, as a guitarist, and all that sort of stuff. And like, I am very, very excited for this album. I'm kind of nervous about all the short track length because like, I mean, we'll talk about Geyser specifically, but like, I'm really worried that like a lot of them will be these kind of shorter ideas that like don't quite amount. But I'm gonna trust her and just trust that it's gonna work really well as like a cohesive album because like, Puberty 2 is incredible, and Bury Me at Maggot Creek is also incredible, and I forget the name of the album before that. Oh, what's it? It's Retire.
Retire from business, new career, sad. Yeah,
Other way around,
exactly.
isn't it? Retire
Oh.
from
It,
sad, new
it,
career in
it's, it's
business.
retired from sad, new career in business.
Oh, right.
Which is just a fucking great album title.
Yeah, it is.
It's
I've
a
listened to
great
that one a few
album title.
times.
I love all three of those albums. Mitski's really, really incredible, and I'm really excited that like it seems like she's maybe taking a step towards some kind of grander sound and some bigger kind of really, really kind of going for like a home run swing here, which I would love to see Mitski like really, really just do some wild shit on this one. So I'm excited for whatever it is.
As much
Mitski.
as like I'm not a huge fan of Mitski, like I feel like if anyone in indie right now is gonna nail an album of like Mad Villainy style, like short tracks that all kind of like flow into each other, I think Mitski would be the one to do it.
Oh, 100%. And I think the reason why she's pretty capable of making it work is because she can pack so much like complicated emotion into such short phrases that like she can write a very short song that says a lot. And so I really hope that that kind of works on the album, and I'm sure it will. She hasn't made a bad album in 3 albums, and I haven't really listened to her first album that much, but I'm also sure it's probably pretty good, really great. So I'm excited. I'm very, very excited for this album.
I fucking hate the font on the cover art. It makes me
I'm
mad. It
not.
makes me upset. Like, it's a really great photograph, and like.
Then, like, not the
And then
best
the
font.
cover art just looks like fucking. It was just pulled from like some free font site, like defont.com, and like slapped into like a paint.net or GIMP and like thrown together in 2 minutes. I just.
Although, I mean, she was never gonna top the Puberty 2 cover. Like, the Puberty 2 cover is just so great.
See, the thing with Puberty 2 is that the cover art is like just it's very confidently bad, and that makes it good. Like, I don't know, it's just like here's this awful thing I'm gonna do, and you're gonna sit there and you're gonna take it, and it works. I don't know. It's just very like I'm having trouble thinking of the right word. It's just in your face. It's not necessarily a choice I would have like ever made as a designer, but it works.
All right, moving on. We'll talk more about Mitski in a second because we're going to talk about her single and Single Alert. But let's talk about this last news story, which is so. I mean, we've talked about this news story a couple times over the last year, and but it now has new context, which is Grimes is working on the new album, and she posted a track list to her Instagram story. And I will say, not referring to any of the context around Grimes right now, which I'm sure we will
Thank
tangent on
you.
in a second. I really love the album track list, which she said is subject to change, but like all of the track names are extremely like peak Grimes track names.
Blaze
And
Forever Like a Useless Star really sticks out to me.
I think my favorite might be a cryptid parentheses heavy metal magazine.
That's definitely
That's
a good one.
and then also the 4 a.m.
I gotta say I
but
like
the
Dark Souls with a Q.
it's all just so unbelievably great. Nymphs at Versailles is
I'm
like
definitely looking forward to Nymphs at Versailles.
I gotta say the one that's jumping out to me is Last Call, 2 question marks.
What if it was just
Maybe.
a cover of Last Call by Kanye West, including her doing the entire like story? She tells the whole story. I would actually love. Okay, but now since we're talking about Grimes, we have to talk about Grimes being. My question is just like, how good is Elon Musk's stroke game if he can just like fuck the anti-imperialism completely out of you? Like, really, really, really must be some incredible stuff going on in the Grimes Elon Musk bedroom, because like for someone who was like so like outspokenly political and like smart to just kind of be like, oh, what, no, Elon Musk isn't anti-union, what are you talking, like, it's just so like come on, like we're not stupid. You're not gonna fool us by that. They're just trying to just pass this up. Like, you're doing like a morally reprehensible thing by dating Elon Musk, and you could just like own it. Like, if she was just like, yeah, I don't care, I'm going to space, I would respect that so much. Like, if she's just like, I want to go to space, fuck you guys, I would respect that a lot more than her like trying to defend her evil capitalist boyfriend.
What if Grimes is dating Elon Musk exclusively to go to space?
I honestly like.
This is an interesting narrative.
I mean, that was my first theory, is just like Grimes really wants to go to space, and Elon Musk was probably being horny in her DMs, and she's like, this is my chance.
What led to Elon Musk sliding into the Grimes DM?
I have
Is
also
my question.
The other hilarious detail, and this has been brought up before, but it's worth mentioning on the podcast, Grimes is the only woman that Elon Musk follows on Twitter. Like, the only one. I don't know
how many people does he follow?
I'm going to do a quick fact check, but I saw that on Twitter that Grimes is the only one.
Statistically, Kanye follows 100% women on Twitter.
He just follows
Kim. Yeah, he just follows Kim. Yeah.
At last report, Elon Musk follows 50 people. I'm going to check if... I will check if there are any more women in the list.
All right, thank you for
the fact checking on that. I would 100,000% believe that Grimes is the only one. Elon is an absolute slime bucket.
I have one more question in this category. Oh, Zach, go ahead.
I see at least one. So there's that.
Okay.
There's at least one other woman that Elon Musk is following.
Come listen to the Indie Heads podcast to us to hear us turn women into statistics.
Oh, Jesus.
Exactly. Fuck! I have one more question before we move on. This is also our second episode in a row that has featured a long Elon Musk Grimes discussion after last week's Smutfest. But like, what indie pop artist would be like? What would be the funniest possible female indie pop artist for Elon Musk to date? Like, is the Elon Musk Grimes pairing better than like, what if Elon Musk dated Carly Rae Jepsen? Like, what would happen to the internet?
I don't know. I don't feel like that's as weird. I really think, like...
I feel like that's weirder, personally. Because Grimes is so weird that, like, her dating, like, a venture cat... It's just, like, sure, whatever. Like, she's so weird that her doing this was... Even though it was surprising based on her politics, it was, like... Like you can never be that surprised by Grimes doing anything.
Yeah.
I think
Grimes has been in the Tyson zone since like 2011 when she sailed down the Mississippi River.
I totally forgot that she sailed down the Mississippi River.
That's a thing? That's a real thing?
That's a thing.
Grimes sailed down the Mississippi River with chickens. Was she just on like a barge or like just like a raft? Grimes on a raft with some chickens floating down the Mississippi River.
Yeah, she was on her Huckleberry Finn shit.
Yeah. I think possibly, actually, the weirdest female artist that Elon Musk could date would be Mitski, actually.
That would be weird.
That would be really fucking weird.
That would be completely inexcusable.
That would be totally wrong. Like, this is totally wrong, but you're right in that Grimes is so weird that it doesn't, like, feel weird.
What about Zola Jesus? Or does she not count in this discussion?
What about all three members of Death Grips?
What about all three members of Haim?
Elon Musk is in a polyamorous relationship with MC Ride, Zach Hill, and Flatlander.
I just wanted to bring this discussion to a close by quoting this very relevant tweet from Kath Barbadoro. I just really don't want to think about Elon Musk laying pipe, okay?
That's fair. I've taken the same position.
100% fair. I only think about it for bit purposes because it makes some good bits.
Yeah, but let's keep it rolling.
Speaking of artists that are very unlikely to date Elon Musk, single alert time. And since we just talked about her in both of the last segments, Mitski put out a single for her new album. It's called Geyser. It's the first track on the album. And it's like an intro track that kind of starts with this 30-second kind of spooky intro that just all of a sudden like completely explodes into this exuberant, triumphant kind of gothic rock music. And it doesn't really work as a single, but that's because it's the album intro, and she just I get why she like shares it as the first single, because it's like this is the first thing you're gonna hear on the album, and she kind of wants to like put this first as like the first thing you really hear like going into it. And it's incredible. It like completely takes my breath away when she just opens up, and like it feels like somehow like kind of almost rawer than some of the vocal delivery she did on Puberty 2, but it's like incredibly dynamic in the production, and it's really, really, really interesting. I have no idea what the rest of the album is going to sound like after hearing this, but I am super duper intrigued, and this is definitely like a very good start to the album cycle, I think. Also, the video is great. I love the video a lot. Any of y'all have thoughts on Geyser?
I do, but they're no fun, and there's no reason for me to share them.
Fair enough.
Come on, man. Yep.
All right. We'll move on to the next single, then, if I'm the only one who has any thoughts on this. Next single. These are fun. These are real.
I have a lot to say about both of these.
All right. You go first. Then,
well, I guess it's more just I have stuff to say about Death Grips in general.
That is true.
I think
you and I are on like a very, very similar page about where we are as far as Death Grips goes.
Death
right
Grips
now
are in a really weird stage of their career, because like a lot of their hype from the first half of this decade, like with them coming up and reaching the peak of their popularity, was like kind of centered around their mystique and just really unique sound and style. And like at this point, Death Grips are kind of like a known quantity. So like kind of, I think a lot of people aren't as hot on these songs, not totally because they're like significantly worse or anything, but I think like it's just we've become a little oversaturated, we're a little used to Death Grips, and it's not like exciting, quote unquote, anymore. But I think these are great songs.
They're really, and the thing is like I think they have like an unfair curve, like because they were so like monumental and like insane that like we kind of developed these really, really, really unreasonable expectations.
Yeah.
especially like it's like people were like, oh, this just sounds like a Death Grip song, whatever, and it's like, well, it sounds like a Death Grip song in that it combines some of the same elements that, like...
Yeah.
Like there's only so many times they can completely and utterly reinvent what Death Grips is. Like, there are only so many genres and styles of music that you can't keep expecting them to just invent new shit, because if they're either not gonna release an album every year and then come out with... I mean, maybe I would like them to go away for a while and, like, really, really try to make an album that feels monumental and great again and, like, capital G great. But, like, I also think this album could very easily be, like, as good as a lot of the great Death Grips albums.
Yeah.
And I think, like, a lot of people... To me, honestly, and this is, like... I mean, this is a little bit... I feel like a lot of people didn't like Death Grips as much as they might have thought they did. I think a lot of people, I think it's kind of more fun to, like, it's like, oh, look how crazy and wild this is. I think, like, I'm not trying to call people, like, fake fans or anything, but I do think there are a lot of the people who were buzzing and talking about Death Grips were not, like, listening to No Love Deep Web every day. Like, they were not bumping that shit on the regular. It was like they listened to, like, Money Store once, and they're like, oh, man, Death Grips are so crazy, man. It's wild stuff. And it's like when the mystique died, it's like it seems like a lot of people were just like, well, whatever, they're not important anymore. But like, they're still making like very similar quality music, I think, to what they were at their peak. Like, you can't tell me that like Black Paint is somehow some monumental drop off from like the stuff they were making on Jenny Death and stuff like that. I also think the other thing is I like their like more straightforward side of Death Grips. Like, I'm personally not a fan of like Redacted on the Moon that much, and like Jenny Death is my favorite Death Grips album, so like I'm okay that they're doing kind of a more straightforward, less like avant-garde sound, because it still is like even their most straightforward stuff is still batshit insane. Their tamest stuff is still so much more adventurous than like almost any other band, that like I think people just completely judge them on a curve that's like not fair to their music. And to talk about the actual singles, I really, really love Black Paint. Yeah, some people have said it just kind of feels like a Jenny Death redux, but I think it's kind of more like, it has the same guitars, but it has kind of more kind of glitchiness to it, and it kind of feels like disjointed and kind of like weird in a way that some of the Jenny Death stuff didn't, but it has a lot of the same kind of elements. And Fly is really cool. It's Fly is kind of reminds me of some like No Love Deep Web type stuff, but like
sure.
I don't know. That one, so Fly has just came out today, so I haven't really like completely gathered. I mean, any Death Grips song takes like 10 listens before you actually have like a good opinion on it. But I really liked Fly as my first two listens of it, and the breakdown at the end of the song that sounds like it's transitioning into something else is very 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 tantalizing, because that could make for a very crazy transition. And so I'm excited for this album. I'm going to enjoy it. I still really like Bottomless Pit more than almost everyone on this podcast. I still think they can make good music.
See, I don't like Bottomless Pit, but like I fuck with these songs, and I don't know. I think just like I don't know. I don't really know what it was about Bottomless Pit. It just didn't come together for me. I think it came out like at a weird time in my life where I just like didn't want to listen to Death Grips. But I don't know. I really like these two songs. I'm excited for the new album, which I didn't think I would be. Black Paint, I just wanted to say, sounds like it's coming at you from the other side of a hurricane. And I also wanted to point out how Black Paint is like really different from them, and I would say that the only like other Death Grips music it has similarity to would be like Bottomless Pit, really.
The only reason why I make the Jenny Death comparison
is
it's a lot heavier on the guitars, but it definitely doesn't sound like a Jenny Death B-side or anything. It sounds like its own thing.
Yeah,
and I'm also happy to see them lean back more into guitars a little more, because I think there's a lot of interesting stuff that they can do with guitar sounding music.
Yeah, a lot of like my favorite Death Grips songs have involved guitars in some way, like even if it's like some kind of weird off-kilter way, like birds is amazing.
Also Blackpaint has some of the best live Zach Hill drums you've heard in a while.
Really?
the drums on that song are very good.
I believe
like,
it.
Very, 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 very good. But yeah, I like both these singles. I said that on the last pod that I wasn't a fan of Streaky. It's grown on me a lot since then. I think it's got a lot of catchy melodies, and I think it's more interesting than some of the like subdued Death Grips tracks that we've seen in the past. So I'm excited. I don't care that people don't care as much about Death Grips anymore. They still make good music to me.
Yeah.
That's the summary of the Death Grips conversation.
Yeah, I don't think they've really dropped off at all. I think just at this point it's kind of about like who is like seriously a fan of the band rather than kind of like a fan of the excitement around them. Which like I don't think is invalid at all, honestly. Like that's
part of being
a music fan, but
yeah,
I like Death Grips, and I'm probably gonna like this album.
Speaking of albums, I'm definitely gonna like this album. It's just a matter of how much. Snail Mail put out the third single for her album, which is coming out this month or next month. I don't know. I'm not gonna look up the date. But anyways, Snail Mail. It's called Let's Find It Out. It's the third single, I'm in full-on hype mode. I mean, like, there's not much I can say on this podcast that I haven't said on the last two podcasts where I talk about Snail Mail singles, besides that, like, this one is a lot more subdued. It doesn't have the same kind of, like, linear build that Heatwave and Pristine have, where they kind of, like, build to this giant, big emotional climax. Like this one is a lot more like reserved, but it definitely has like the same kind of emotional weight to it, just in a more like kind of subdued delivery, which I really like, because like my one thing I thought after Heatwave and Pristine was like these are two incredible indie rock singles, but like they have kind of similar structures to them, and I wanted to see her do some different stuff, and Let's Find It Out was a great way of saying like the album's gonna have lots of different kind of structured songs and different kind of tones to it. So Lindsay Jordan is just like like an incredible songwriter, just like just absolutely stunning. And I think this album is going to be one of the better indie rock debuts we've heard in a while. And yeah, I'm stupid hype.
Can we real quick just talk for a second about how we haven't been granted a fucking Vampire Weekend single yet?
God damn it.
The audacity of
I know.
That man.
When will the cloud spread and Ezra descend from whatever fucking throne he's sitting on right now and give us this shit?
We also have we have no idea what it's going to sound like.
Seriously.
At all.
Yeah. He said that, like, this is the end of, that Modern Vampires of the City was the end of the trilogy, whatever that means, and, like, Rostam is playing a reduced role now that he isn't, like, super in the band anymore, and what the fuck is it gonna sound like? Ezra...
We have no idea.
Yeah, Ezra put out a song for the Peter Rabbit movie. Well, he wrote a song for it. And it's actually, like, honestly really, really, really cute and fun. I like it a lot. And it's got, like, a very, like, I don't know, it's got a very Vampire Weekend moment in it. It's supposed to be inspired by their first album because, like, the soundtrack of that movie included several songs from the self-titled. And, like, they asked him to write a song for the movie, and they were like, and he was like, okay. It's got this piano moment that I would have, like, otherwise kind of attributed to, Rostam. So, I have no fucking clue what it's gonna sound like anymore. At first I thought I had an idea, but now I realize I don't actually know who was doing what at any moment, in any Vampire Weekend song. So.
I really hope this is just, like, I hope it's just something, like, ridiculous. I hope it's a country album. Like, I hope it's just something, like...
I hope it's a death row.
Completely. That would be... I would love to hear Ezra do, like abrasive music. Like, hear what that sounds like for him.
I wouldn't want it to sound anything like Death Grips, though, honestly.
No, I would not, actually. I'm only saying that because I'm, like intrigued, if we waited all this time for a Vampire Weekend album and it sounded like shitty Death Grips ripoffs, I would not be happy. But whatever it is, whatever our sweet boy Ezra is up to, I need it now, not whatever dates that he puts on his damn radio show and then doesn't actually correspond anything with.
To be fair, he never said, but he
never said anything, and that was probably, like, I didn't actually listen to the episode, and honestly, it was probably mostly clickbait, those things, but still, like, we should hear something, like, hey, the album's coming later this year, or hey, single's coming, just tell me something, Ezra, you saw it.
To be fair, I'm the starting point of that clickbait. Most people weren't saying anything about that, but I had spent, like, a full week listening to Time Crisis, and they do that, like, Billboard segment every show, and he had never included date-related information, album-related information before. He said the phrase, fourth album, very awkwardly, like, four times while talking about a Mariah Carey single. And then was, like, launching into this weird forced discussion of the dates corresponding to this particular Bone Thugs and Harmony song right as they were, like, quickly wrapping up the show. So it just felt suspicious, especially because they were supposed to answer questions about the album on that episode, and instead just fucking talked about snack food again. But
God damn
it's fine. I'm not too salty. I just want some new music.
I'm kind of glad I'm not like a Vampire Weekend super fan, because that sounds like some like emotional torture. Just like, oh, we're supposed to hear about the album. Oh
yeah. No, I went on the Vampire Weekend subreddit afterwards, and people were just so so whiny about it, and so, like, I don't even care anymore.
It's like, no, you do. You're posting it.
Yeah. Just
Maybe
like.
Ezra wants us to make the album.
Yeah, no, the album was the friends we made along the way.
And with that, I think it's time that we try something new here. So, as you may know, singer-songwriter and Panera Bread aficionado Mark Kozelek released a brand spanking new album last week. Jackson here would love to talk about it for as long as he can, but we're on a bit of a tight schedule, so we are giving him exactly 5 minutes to talk about the self-titled Mark Kozelek album. Whenever that timer runs out, he has to stop no matter what he's doing.
I might throw in some ad-libs since this is song length.
All right. Jackson, are you ready?
Yes.
Your time starts now.
The bastard man has done it again, goddammit. Mark Kozelek's back. He's released a new album of material. It's an hour and a goddamn half long, because of course it is. And this album was basically an album that he recorded in hotel studio. In like hotels, he would set up these kind of mobile studios where he would just record with him and a guitar. And the album is like 90% just guitar music, which
Isn't that
was
just like how he records his albums now, though.
I mean, yeah, but like the last couple of albums were like, oh, first of all, the last couple albums were in studios, and also all of his albums were like with a band, or like he was on a lot of his albums, he was like working with instruments that he's not like that weren't his guitar, because he wanted to do stuff that was like different and pushing him out of his comfort zone. But here he's fully in his he's doing acoustic nylon string, beautiful, beautiful guitar arrangements, and really, it's some of his prettiest guitar work he's ever done. I think like there's a lot of moments with this album that are very, very, very breathtaking musically, and it's more of the same from last year, but also like because it's more of the same in that it's completely like unfiltered Mark Kozelek just all over this thing, and god damn it, are there some really, really fucking good songs on here. I can't believe how good we finally got the CDQ of My Love for You is Undying, which is the song of the year. It's also otherwise known as the bookstore argument song, because he gets in an argument he tells a story about getting in an argument at a bookstore where this lady is like, are you the real Mark Kozelek? We should go to Panera Bread. Then she's like, just kidding, I don't want to go to Panera Bread. And it's a whole thing. They get in this album is fucking, it's ridiculous. It is absurd, but the most absurd thing about it is the fact that, once again, like, I genuinely do love it. Like, it's not a bit. I promise you, if this was, like, a running bit, I would just, like, be like, alright, guys, the jig is up. I can't. But, like, once again, like, from start to finish, I can listen to a 90-minute-long album that is just him telling stories and, like, genuinely be engaged and interested. And every once in a while, like, obviously, like, some of this stuff is straight up boring. Like, some of it is like, and like, if you Half can't time. Make, if you can't make it through this album, full credits to you. Like, I totally understand, I get it, but like, it really like speaks to something in me in a way that I can't really articulate very well. I've tried and written lots of things, but I think this album has a lot of really great. There's a song on here, Sublime, is one of my favorite Mark Kozelek songs he's done in a while. It's a song that's in part about the lead singer of Sublime. There's a song on here called Weed Whacker, where at one point during the song he walks into a store or something, and there's music playing on the radio, and he's like, what's that playing on the radio? And the guy's like, it's this guy Sun Kil Moon, you've probably never heard of him, this is this album Common as Light and Love. And also, the thing he says, who's that rapping on the radio, is what Mark Kozelek says. So he fully acknowledges rapping, which is incredible. And then the guy to Mark Kozelek's face explains who Sun Kil Moon is. And that happens all in a... like, the levels of meta and the levels of just... I don't even know how to talk about his music anymore, because it's just so... it's so ridiculous and, Mark, like, a parody of...
Mark,
he had heat stroke, didn't he, in the song?
Maybe, I don't know.
Mark, at this point, just makes, like, podcast music, like old man podcast music. Like these aren't songs. These are podcast bits.
Yeah. This is the first 10 minutes of an episode of WTF with Marc Maron, but set to like beautiful acoustic string guitars. And one of my favorite things, two of my last favorite things about the album. There is a 13-minute long song called The Banjo Song. There is not a single banjo in all 13 minutes of it. I'm an hour and a half into the album, and I'm on, like, the second to last track, and I'm like, huh, Mark Kozelek hasn't talked about boxing at all. And, of course, the second to last track of the song is entirely about boxing. And also, the last song on the album, I Cried During Wall Street, is an incredible, incredible Mark Kozelek song, and it's one of my favorites of his recent output, and it... I can't believe he made a song called I Cried During Wall Street where he specifically talks about a scene in the movie Wall Street that made him cry, and it made me emotional. Like, I don't understand how it did, but it did. Okay, that's it. We're done.
Is the guitars on
five
this
minutes
is my
on
town
the dot. Great job.
Are pretty. Very, very pretty. That's all I want to say.
Yeah, there are some really nice guitars in this album. They sound good.
Which is the song in which he harmonizes over himself singing the word diarrhea?
It's
on the first half of the album.
I think it's either like
the first few songs.
I think it might be Live in Chicago.
Yeah,
it's either Live in Chicago or it's either Live in Chicago or Mark Kozelek Museum.
That's
it's
a great
one of those
song.
Two.
The Mark Kozelek Museum is a fucking fantastic song.
That is a great song.
I guess this is the third main topic, really.
We're
just
gonna
blitz through it.
Thank you guys for disrespecting the timer, which ended about a minute ago. But otherwise, good job. A good premiere for this segment, which we will hopefully do again at some point. I quite like it.
Zach, you said this was a government-mandated 5 minutes, and to that I say, fuck the government.
That's true.
I'm sure we will. There's another. This is the first. I think there's only two releases. Oh, there's only two that we know of. There probably will be a third one. Like,
two Mark Kozelek 1.5-hour albums coming out this year.
Man, he's really slacking.
He put out like 5 hours of music. I think it was closer to six by the end of the year because he put out like two EPs. Common as Light and Love, the Yaesu collaborative album, the Sean Yeadon collaborative album, the Jim White and Ben Boy collaborative album, and then this year, I mean, he put out a live album this year, but that was only on CD, which I have. It's incredible.
That's like a podcast every 2 months or so. That's something.
Just like us.
Yeah.
No, but the later album this year is going to be a Sun Kill Moon album that's going to be recorded with like a big I think the thing I heard is that like the first album this year is like more minimal and more guitar work, and the second album is going to have like bigger instrumentation than he usually has.
That's
and it's going to be like a so I'm really excited to hear whatever the next album is. I hope it's like completely musically different but the same podcast bullshit is what I hope out of it.
I'm definitely curious. It's been the progression from Benji to Common as Light and Love is just really fascinating.
it's incredible to just like mark the change from each one manages to like unravel like the concept of songwriting.
Yeah.
Just further and further each time. I've talked about this in my write-ups. It's like he's really chasing this kind of like complete honesty where like he's trying to make truly like honest and vulnerable music by not filtering any of his thoughts or musings and just kind of dumping them all onto a page and like sort of tasking us with sorting through them like it's literally we're going through his old attic of stuff, and it's like there's always like incredibly like true powerful things in there. You just kind of have to sift through like. But I don't mind sifting through because I could listen to him read the dictionary. His voice sounds so good.
There really isn't like a shred of irony. Like when he sings diarrhea and he harmonizes over himself, it's totally like
it's not
straightforward, serious. Yeah, it's not a joke. He's just like it's obviously supposed to be like a little funny, but like it's not.
He's a really funny guy.
Yeah.
Like, but like it's not like the joke is that he's doing this. Look how funny it is that I'm doing this.
Yeah.
It's like he's being whatever. Okay, we have to stop.
Yeah.
We have to stop. There are albums to talk about. One of which is really good, and the other one is an album.
We'll see. We'll see.
I think we're gonna have one album that's a lot, one topic that's gonna be a lot of gushing, and one that's gonna be more debating. But the first of those two, I'm very excited to talk about.
The album is Beach House 7, and it's so fucking good. I'm here to confirm that this album is in fact a bop, a banger, a big mood. And that it does indeed fuck.
Does it bump in the whip?
It does bump in the whip. It actually, like, this is such a great driving album. It's such a great summer driving album. Which, like, every Beach House album is, but this one, like, even
I think the reason why...
Even harder.
Yeah, I agree, because I think, I mean, kind of starting to get into it, like, one of the things that's, like, different about this Beach House album as compared to other ones, like... It is definitely dreamy. It is definitely Beach House. But there's a lot more, like, driving instrumentation on this album that just, like... It's like, oh, word. Like, there's a lot more, like, oomph to it. And it kind of feels like it's propelling forward through, like, something rather than, like...
It's a lot more shoegazy in that way. Like...
It is definitely more shoegazy.
It's the most shoegazy of anything they've done. Like, even the vocals, like, compare, like, any song on this album to, like, Norway from Teen Dream. Huge difference.
Yeah, I was just listening to Teen Dream earlier today, and it was, like, on one hand, I was like, this is, I think, one of their, if not their most, like, creative and innovative album, but I was kind of thinking about it, like, in some ways it still is a Beach House album, they're doing Beach House things, but then like I compared this album to like other Beach House albums, and when you flip back and forth between them, it's like night and day. Like, they don't sound alike.
Yeah.
Which is wild, because like a year ago it was like, well, Beach House have run out of ideas, and then they dumped. Can you put, like, no, not even a year ago.
This album feels like they took 5 years off and came back with their best work, but it's been 2 years.
But they didn't.
And it's, like, staggeringly better than most of their other material, and their other material is so good. I'm honestly, like, a pretty big fan of Depression Cherry still, but, like, this is, it's insane how much better this album is than Depression Cherry or like Thank You Lucky Stars.
100%, yeah. This album, it's really like I think I liked Lemon Glow a lot more than some of the people, but like Lemon Glow was the first single was like, oh, like this is like kind of cool and interesting, but it didn't really like it felt like Lemon Glow would make sense on Depression Cherry. Like, you could put that song on there, but you could not put like, you could not put Dive on Depression Cherry. You could not put like, there's so many just like incredibly dynamic like songs, and I think this is by far the most varied Beach House album. The other thing, like,
it's every
song
on here, though, like it just works so well.
Because that's the thing, is like Beach House are so good at creating atmosphere that like the atmosphere is what keeps all these different ideas cohesive together. It's because they all kind of capture the same dreamy, like indescribable thing that is the appeal that brings everyone to Beach House. But like, they do so on this album. They basically are like, what are all the different ways we can make a Beach House song? Can we make a Beach House song with like Vespertine synth lead? Yes, you can, and it sounds like Black Car. And this might Black Car straight up might be my favorite Beach House song. Like, it might, I it's too early to,
that's
like,
that's a fair take,
but like it is like completely transportative in a way that like just blew my socks all the way off. And there are just so many moments on this album like that. Like, I'm not gonna pronounce it, the French one, the French song.
Long
but the part, yes, the part in the French song where they start talking in French right as there's a key change is like I know my soul like leaves my body. Like, it is completely some wild off the wall shit going on that song and many other songs.
Speaking of wild off the wall shit, I want to go back to Lemon Glow, which didn't impress me at all as a single, but then on the album blows me the fuck away. The acidy guitars that come into the song and provide like this amazing contrast to like the rest of it and just give it so much depth and like
The guitars are, I mean, I noticed the guitars right away on the single just because those guitars sound very, very, very inspired by, like, Dark Red by Shlomo. Like, they're, those kind of, like, sour, wailing, haunting guitars are very, 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 very prevalent on one of my favorite albums of all time, Dark Red by Shlomo. And so that,
to it. They struck me as very, like, mid-early 90s.
Lemon Glow is interesting because on its face, like, it kind of, like, if you're not paying attention, it just kind of sounds like a beach house song.
Yeah.
But, like, it really is different. Like, the construction of it, the parts that put it together aren't, like, the way that they normally make beach house songs.
Yeah.
But I think the reason why Lemon Glow snuck up on us as a single so much is because, like, they're so good at creating an atmosphere that at first we heard it and we're like, oh, this is a beach house song, it makes me feel like a beach house song, but we weren't like looking closely and realizing that this was like not a beach house song as we conceptually understand one, but because it made us feel the same way, we were so used to two albums in a row of like recycled ideas leading to pretty good results.
And so
like we weren't really ready to understand like where Beach House were going, but then like Dive came out and I was like, okay.
And Dive is an MTV song, right?
Like
it's 100% like very strongly influenced by that album, but it like feels like a Beach House song. It doesn't really it doesn't feel like they were just ripping off My Bloody Valentine, but like
there's a lot like, of MTV on here. There's a lot of slow dive on here. A lot of slow dive.
But like the glitchy beat on Dive and then the soaring guitars come in, that's just a very like MBV trick. It works. And it does feel beach housey for sure.
Yeah, and songs like Pay No Mind feels very, very slow divey. My only thing in this album is I don't love Dark Spring that much. I'm a little underwhelmed.
Honestly, that might be my favorite Beach House opener, which is definitely, like, a take because Zebra exists.
Yeah, because Zebra exists.
But, like, it hits me so fucking hard, like, especially when I'm driving.
For whatever weird reason, Dark Spring, like, just doesn't grab me as a first song. I have no criticisms of the song or reasons why. It just kind of doesn't.
Just like focus on the fucking crisp ass drums that the drum fill that like starts the song. Like turn it up a little and then you just get like consumed by this wave of sound. I don't know. I love it. It works on me.
I also a couple more shoutouts. I mean, I don't like to. I've been trying not to call things a big mood as much, but God damn it, is Drunk in LA a big mood?
Yes.
Like, oh, that song is.
I had a good run playing horses in my mind. Is one of the best lines like ever. The hooks on this album in general are so good.
That was the other thing is like usually in a Beach House album, it takes me like months. /years before I start to like know what any of the lyrics to any of the songs are, but like I can't quote like this album off the top of my head, but like there are a lot of very memorable like lyrical moments on this album that like kind of like stick out to you in a way, and I think part of that is because like you're kind of off your usual like it's so different from like your standard Beach House fare that like they kind of let the vocals kind of stand out more in certain parts and really feel like lead vocals instead of just like a part of the Beach House kind of vibe.
Imagine the band narrative if Beach House hadn't released anything after Teen Dream until this.
the
hype around this album would be fucking insane right now.
Even if they just like hadn't released Depression Cherry and Thank Your Lucky Stars, like if we just gotten Bloom, nothing else, and then like people would have lost their goddamn mind.
Definitely.
I don't know. And I think as the year goes on, like, I think people are very aboard the hype train. I mean, like, it got, like, what did it get, 8.9?
Really? I don't know. I didn't check.
It got a high 8. People are aboard the hype
train. Yeah, 8.9.
Yeah, and like, I think it's only over the year kind of gonna grow as people realize how fucking great it is. I'm not on your boat of Dark Spring being the best Beach House opener, but goddamn it, is Last Ride the best Beach House closer?
That's definitely like, fair.
Oh, the piano loop is it's like what if Beach House covered Daydreaming by Radiohead is kind of what it feels like, with that just melancholy piano loop that kind of builds into this large kind of wall of atmosphere. And it's so, like, there are a lot of, like, sad Beach House songs that are just kind of, like, melancholy and dreamy. Most sad Beach House songs are kind of, like, I'm kind of sad, but, like, I'm stoned and just, like, I don't care or whatever. But, like, there has not been a Beach House song that, like, truly fucks me up the way that Last Ride does. It's really, really, like, haunting and climactic and big in a way that this album, like Bloom obviously was like Beach House like pivoting toward like a very like big sound in terms of like trying to write these really kind of straightforward large reaching audiences, like they were big in terms of like what their ambitions were, but like we've never heard a Beach House album that sounds this like massive in sonic terms as like
Definitely.
This one.
This is like the culmination of what they started there. And the contrast between like that and Teen Dream is kind of stunning, because Teen Dream is so intimate. And like same with Ocean, obviously.
Yeah. I also want to shout out Sonic Boom, who produced this, because I don't want to give him the credit for like unlocking whatever Beach House of, because clearly a lot of this is like some of just their most creative inventive work, but clearly bringing someone new into the studio helped them spark something, because like they snapped here, and the production on this album is incredible.
Yeah, definitely. It doesn't have a dull moment. There isn't like. Like, every song, I'm, like, excited for the next song. I don't know, with some albums, I find myself, like, there are three songs, and, like, you're, like, kind of, like, waiting for that next one to start when you're listening to it, but this record, the next one is just the next song on the track listing.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, like you usually with Beach House, especially with Beach House albums.
Oh,
Beach House
for sure,
albums,
yeah. Like Bloom is
every
really
Beach House album,
this, honestly. Like,
oh,
it's a great album, but, like, Myth and Wishes and, like, I'm struggling to think of track names, but, like, those two songs and, like, one other, like, those are, like, the monumental moments
wild,
on that record.
Wild,
yeah.
Wild. I mean, for me, it's the run of the first couple tracks and then Wishes.
Yeah.
And then also, I'm a big Irene fan, but I think the way that Beach House albums always worked is that, like, you knew you could put on a Beach House album and it would be very consistently pleasant the whole way through. And there would be four songs you fucking love, and you put the album on, and when it's the song you love, you're losing your shit. And when it's not, you're having a good time anyways, because it's just this, there's this baseline level of enjoyment you get out of every Beach House song, because they know how to make things sound good to your ears. But like, this album has like, pretty much every single song on it is like, I'm so excited for it to come on next.
Yeah.
It's the the best Beach House album. It's better than Teen Dream, sure. I think.
Yeah. No, yeah. I think so too. But like Teen Dream is definitely close. Like I still think that's an amazing record.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Like I don't think it's like miles better than other Beach House albums. Like I definitely think Teen Dream is a pretty close second. I think Devotion and Bloom are up there as well, but like, yeah, I think this is my favorite.
I do think of this record as one of like the best dream pop shoegaze albums I've ever heard, period. Like, I don't know, I feel like normally I wouldn't quite think of Beach House like that. Like I wouldn't be like thinking of them in the same league as like Slow Dive and MBV, but this record is really that shit.
It is that shit.
It is truly indeed that shit.
Also, Woo fucking rules.
Yeah, definitely.
I think at this point I've shouted out pretty much every song.
Yeah, we haven't. No, yeah, we didn't talk about Girl of the Year.
or Lose Your Smile.
Yeah, Lose Your Smile is those fucking great. But and so is Girl of the Year. They're all great songs.
It's a great album. Go listen to it if you haven't already. Oh, Zach, you haven't said it. Have you listened to this at all? Zach, hello?
No.
I lost him. Oh.
Okay, that's fair. But do you have anything else you want to say, Alex, or do you want to move on to the next main topic?
I'm good. I don't know. Like, they're both at peak performance. Victoria's vocals are, like, the best they've ever been on this record.
True. 100% true. And I think part of that is how they're produced, but also it's like really incredible performances by her.
Yeah, I don't know, just like the quality of her voice is just like better somehow to me. Maybe I'm just like projecting that, but like it just feels better. I think it's probably a good time to move on to our next discussion, which is Arctic Monkeys, Tranquility Base, Hotel, and Casino. And I think we've got a wide range of opinions on this.
Yes. Yep. This is an album kind of this is an album that inspires a wide range of opinions of pretty much, I've seen like all over the map from like, this is one of the worst albums of the year, this album, like, and it was like so weird because like I felt like the day it came out there were already people like, you guys aren't giving this album enough credit, and just like it's just like the takes started flying right away. And actually, since from my first listen to now, I've kind of cooled off on how negative I was on it. First, I'm definitely going to still be the most negative out of the three of us, I think. I don't want to go first. I'll let Zach go first, because you like it the most.
First of all, I want to foreground any discussion of this album with this. I respect them a lot more for making this album than I would have if they just made AM2, and yeah. I fucking loved AM.
Me fucking too.
I think AM is one of the best rock albums of the decade. I understand why people don't like it. But it would have been
not a fan.
Same.
Yeah, me as well. I know. Just think about easy it would have been for them to make another AM and ride on the popularity of that for years and years and years.
And instead
they make something as off the wall and bonkers as this. And if nothing else, that deserves a tip of the hat, I think.
Oh, 100%.
Star Treatment is so good. I'm sorry.
It is.
I know we're letting Zach talk right now, but I can't hold it in.
that is the one place I think we are all three in agreement, is that Star Treatment rule. It is a great opener to this album.
It's like, it's got so much personality, and it's so charismatic in a weird kind of seedy way, and like, I don't know. I mean, that's kind of how I feel about a lot of the album, but like, in general, like, Star Treatment is the most obviously successful.
Yep. It also makes me laugh a lot. Like, it's laugh out loud funny.
Yeah.
Like, I freaking love the lyric, "I'm a big name in deep space."
The
definitely
chorus of
good.
"Who you gonna call the Martini Police" is like one of my favorite choruses I've heard in the
Yeah,
song this
me
year.
too.
And then "What
What
do
do
you
you
mean
mean you've never
you
seen
have?"
Blade Runner?
The way he says that makes me laugh every fucking time. Like, it's so. But to quickly kind of,
You know what's a
like.
little weird to me about this record, actually? Quick tangent.
Yeah, go ahead.
It's a very aggressively American album, but
It is.
Oh,
Arctic
yeah.
Monkeys are not an American band. But
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
this is some like Las Vegas in space lounge lizard type shit, and it's like he references American culture a lot. It's very American.
He seems like very fascinated with American culture and like has a lot to. Well, actually, that's I wouldn't say he has a lot to say. He thinks he has a lot to say. That would be my opinion.
I think he does say a lot on this album. I don't know if it's like super cohesive or like really like means anything, but he definitely like drops a lot of concepts.
Oh
There's,
yeah. Yeah.
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let me try to rein this back in.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Here's the thing. As I've said many times, both like in the podcast chat and on Twitter, I've struggled to come up with words for why I like this album besides I just do. But I feel like it's starting to come together a bit. Like, first of all, I admire just how like I said this before, I admire how strange it is. Like,
This making this album the way they did was a ballsy move.
yeah.
Like you don't have a
Like,
hit like "Do I Wanna Know" and then do this.
yeah,
You
like,
don't do
may
that.
yeah, like maybe 4 out of 5, but there isn't really a surefire hit single on this album.
Although the one thing I will say is that like getting 500 million streams on a song kind of gives you some leeway to dick around and do the shit
Well,
that you
yeah,
really want to do.
yeah.
But like I definitely agree that like my one thing I have said in my various states of disliking this album, I have maintained that I'm very happy they made this album, even if it doesn't work for me. This I was fully expecting this podcast, like when the track list came out, I was fully expecting this to be they made another AM.
Yeah.
We're gonna make fun of all the cringy moments. We're gonna
Yeah.
dunk on it. It's gonna be like a boarding house reach type album discussion, and
Yeah, like
it really isn't that. It's a not at all. Genuine.
I even stopped you guys from doing that when they announced the album, but in the back of my head, even I was thinking, this is probably not gonna be good, and
Yeah,
yet
we were
here
fully
I am
ready
2 weeks
to
after it
review
came out,
this
and I kind of love
album
it.
without like even a single.
Yeah, that was the bit that I suggested. I mean,
Yeah.
but there's a song on here called "She Looks Like Fun." You understand how we were very, very, very concerned.
The thing with that song is that that's like such a repulsive phrase that you think it's gonna be bad, but it's honestly one of the best songs on the album. Like, the lyrics aren't even that bad. No, that's genuinely my opinion.
I just can't stop thinking about how he sings the chorus. It's like he's
Yeah.
singing the Monster Mash.
It does kind of, that's exactly what
It's
it sounds
very
like. Oh my gosh.
self-aware. I'm fine.
Yeah.
I'm glad that with She Looks Like Fun, Alex Turner finally delivered us the song we deserved, which is a song in which he admits he's full of shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean this album, it definitely feels like an Alex Turner solo album more than it feels like an Arctic Monkeys album, I think is also an interesting thing. Like, he's 100% like not just stealing the show, but like really, really it like the other Arctic Monkeys albums, I never really thought of them as like, wow, Alex Turner, what a front man. I just think of them more as they're a band that does these things well and these things I don't like and whatever. And like, this is like, hello, I'm Alex Turner. Like, he's fully on his like, for better and for worse, Father John Misty shit here. Like, he's very like, I am this. But I think the thing about this album that doesn't make it pure comedy is that I like Alex Turner's personality on this album, which makes it a
But that
lot
might be
more.
because we don't really know a whole lot about Alex Turner
That's
as a
also
person.
Yeah.
And I mean, and mean, if I'm judging him just solely off that, like, brown suit getup he had on when he was performing on Late Night, that is, like, ridiculous, and he looked ridiculous in it. But, I mean, like, I think, so, Star Treatment, and also, I really like, the first three songs of this album, I think, are, like, incredible. Like, very, actually, actively good.
Yeah.
But I think from there, especially the three-song run of Tranquility Base Hotel and Casino, Golden Trunks, and then 4 out of 5, like, every time takes me out of it. Because, like, this album is, like, casting a spell, like, a very specific kind of, like, and you have to, like, be fully engaged with it, and you have to be really kind of, like, intrigued with Alex Turner's persona that he's sort of playing. And because that run of three or four songs, actually really from Tranquility Base Hotel and Casino all the way to, like, Science Fiction, I really don't like. And so, like, because of that, like, it just, like, loses steam for me, and I find myself not being able to enjoy, like, She Looks Like Fun and the Ultra Cheese, which are, like, pretty solid songs toward the back half. And, like, it just really loses a lot of the momentum that it has, but, like, fully fucking hats off to Alex Turner for, like, trying some yeah, like, shit.
You know what's the biggest surprise of this year?
What is?
The Ultra Cheese is a very good song.
Oh, yeah!
I mean, also that She Looks Like Fun is a very good song, because that was, like,
pretty much half of the songs on here. Like, when Star Treatment was the first one, that was honestly one of the most concerning things, because, like, I just fully didn't, like, think Alex Turner was capable of having a complex and nuanced discussion about stardom and, like, culture. Like, I just
weirdly self-aware. Like, I'm like confused, because AM is self-aware. Self-aware.
It's unbelievably not self-aware, and that was the whole thing that had us so worried, is that, like, we didn't trust Alex Turner to make a song called if there was, like, an Alex Cameron song called, literally, we thought this album was going to be Force Witness, but unironically. Like, that is what I was expecting this album to be. Force Witness, but not as a bit. And it is actually similarly funny and cheeky and, like, smart in the way that Force Witness... God damn, I'm talking myself into liking this album. There are some stinkers on here. Like, he does fall on his face. There are songs on here I straight up do not like, and it is, I would say, like, half to more than half of them. But, like, when he falls on his face on this album, it's like, it's like he's trying some difficult shit. Yeah. And so it is, even though I'm, like, probably not going to listen to this album as an album after this podcast, because I don't have to listen to it to talk about it. I am genuinely excited for the next Arctic Monkeys album, because after doing this, like, where they go next, now I have no fucking idea. Like, to me, like, when AM came out, I just kind of saw the rest of the Arctic Monkeys career is they're going to be this tentpole capital R rock band that is going to make music I don't like, and it's going to piss me off that it's super popular. But, like, this album, it's like, all of the Arctic Monkey AM fans are just kind of out on this, like, completely, and I love it. Like, I love that Alex Turner flipped the bird and is like, screw you guys, I'm gonna go make lounge jazz and talk about Blade Runner.
I
feel very wise man about his head, in that I like both of them. Oh, jeez. But, like, the more I think about it, the more I think what I admire the most about this album is that I think we all forgot that Alex Turner is a really perceptive songwriter. Like, songs like A Certain Romance and Cornerstone can't be written by just anyone, you know? And on this album...
That is true. I did like the old, like, Alex Turner. Like, I like the songwriting on a lot of the early Arctic Monkeys albums. And for some reason, like, when a band gets, like, really popular and, like, less good in the way that Arctic Monkeys, at least to my perceptive, less good, like, usually when a band has that kind of heel turn, as it were, like, to popular, usually it's like this narrative of, like, oh, they've gotten too famous. They just can't make smart music the way that they used to. Alex Turner's too famous to be self-aware and smart anymore because he's just too famous or whatever. And it's like this thing, oh, we've lost the old Arctic Monkeys forever. And we definitely aren't going to get an album like the early Arctic Monkeys anymore. Like, no, we're not getting that anymore. But, like, it is a good reminder that, like, just because, like, an artist makes a move toward, like, broad songwriting and popularity doesn't mean that they've just lost the ability to write smart songs.
Yeah, but, like, the more I think about it, the more I realize, like, this is what happens when a terrific writer like Alex Turner decides to let himself get loopy just to prove that he can. And for the most part, I think he's charismatic enough that it works. He's, like, inventing these documentaries. These bands called the Martini Police. And managing to get away with a song called... Managing to get away with Monster Truck Front Flip. And he makes it all work, even though it sounds like Leonard Cohen after two glasses of absinthe. I think that's freaking amazing to think about.
That's such a great analogy. Yeah. Jackson mentioned Alex Turner falling on his face a lot on this record, and I totally agree, but the thing is, like, he falls on his face,
yeah,
and then he gets up and gives you, like, a suave look and a smirk, and it's kind of lovable. Like,
yeah, like...
The other thing I think I would say about this is, like, I think the instrumental, like, hard left turn this album makes is really interesting, and I think it really works on some of the songs. A lot of the instrumentals here are very samey and feel very, like I said this in the chat, it's like, for the first, like, for the run of songs that I really enjoy in the beginning, I'm like, ooh, this is so interesting. But then, like, by the second half of the song, I'm like, god damn it, give me, like, something, like, hooky and sticky to, like, flat. Like, I didn't think that would be what I wanted from this album at all. I thought this album was going to be too broad and I'd want more nuance. But then, like, this album had the exact opposite problem I was expecting, which is that, like, god damn it, stop, like, navel-gazing and just, like, noodling jazz music and, like just say something, like, propulsive and cohesive and, like, coherent, please.
Yeah. Like, in its own way, this is a pretty brave record, all things considered. Like, who would have expected Arctic Monkeys to make something like this?
It definitely, it has me so intrigued for what the rest of their career is, because now they've made this album, like, you could tell me the next Arctic Monkeys album is pretty much any genre, and I'd probably believe you.
Yeah.
Like, oh yeah, Arctic Monkeys are making a ska album next. I'm like, sure, whatever.
That kind of makes sense, though. I feel like I could see that easy. I guess probably more now than before.
Yeah, like, but, like, I like a lot what Stephen Hayden said about this when he was talking about it on Celebration Rock. Like, this is an album that you think that they have to make to get older, to, like, age as a band, because you can't really do AM forever. Unless you're a band like AC/DC, you can't get away with that. And here they've made something that gives them a lot of paths forward all of a sudden, and I think that's something pretty special.
I would really like to see... What I'm hoping for next is that, like, I have now learned that Alex Turner can be super charismatic, and now I want this superpower that he's acquired since he was bit by a radioactive spider or something in the time since AM. I don't know how it happened, but, like, now that he has these new powers of actually being interesting.
To a Tranquility Base hotel and casino on the dark side of the moon and performed as, you know, a piano player and singer in the bar there, and came back to Earth and made this album.
And he opened a taqueria on the moon while he was at it. Good for him.
Yeah.
By the way, that is, like, probably the worst line on this album to have stuck in your head. I built a taqueria on the moon!
Yeah, like, this album, like, I also said this in the chat, which is that, like, I don't think he says anything, like, truly profound on this album, but it doesn't... I'm not sure if it matters.
Yeah.
Because the thing is that, like, on Star Treatment, I'm like, oh, wow, like, this is so irreverent and, like, self-aware. Like, maybe this album is gonna really, like, have a lot to say. And, like, I'm sure Alex Turner could tell you what this album is quote unquote about, and I don't think I would probably agree with it.
Yeah.
I think a lot of this album is like a bunch of charming non sequiturs that kind of add up to a lot of nothing. But like, that's better than like what I thought it was gonna be. And now what I was saying is now that we've seen this kind of range from him, I want him to utilize some of these sorts of elements toward like a more like I want to hear him try to be this funny and charming and self-aware on like songs that people are going to like. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, the thing is, he did like sort of kind of explain it in like a little feature with Pitchfork that came out day of the album, but even then he was very cagey. Like, he does say, oh, this song is a little bit about technology, so is this song, this one is kind of about Trump, but otherwise it's still very oblique. I look forward to never completely figuring it out, but this is definitely, surprisingly, one of my favorite albums of the year so far, and I think it's going to stay that way.
It's kind of confounding.
It's
so not good, but it's also so good to me. Like, some of the songwriting just doesn't work. Just absolutely doesn't work. But the force of personality that he applies to every single song, like, makes it enjoyable still.
Yet he absolutely believes every single word he is saying on this album, and that counts for a lot.
Also the just the pure like value of after making AM, which is like numbers wise one of the biggest indie rock like albums of like the decade, and then to start your next album crooning over like lounge music saying I just wanted to be one of the Strokes as your first lyric on your new album is just like so funny. It's like you were as big as the Strokes. Like you were doing Strokes level big stuff, and now it's so funny that he's like, I just want to be one of the Strokes, as he's firmly pivoting away from anything remotely Strokes in his music.
Yeah, like it's like he's realized that maybe isn't the best direction.
Yeah, maybe it's like I just wanted to be that, and I actually, that kind of, like, at first I was kind of thinking...
And it's not
that,
all it cracked up to be.
I was thinking of that line more as, like, oh, that was what I always wanted. And I never really thought of it in that kind of context. Like, I just wanted to be, like, this kind of big rock star, and it wasn't... And then we've heard lots of songs about that, but none of them have been this weird. None of those other songs about how being a rock star isn't actually that fun... none of those songs mention Blade Runner at all.
I enjoy this record. I think I don't have too much left to say.
I enjoyed the conversation about this record a lot more than I actually enjoyed this record, but
yeah.
As I've said, like, fucking kudos to Alex Turner for being somehow a weirder dude than I gave him credit for.
This
is kind of pure comedy, and that's a lot more fun to talk about than it's to listen to it, but I had a lot of fun listening to it, so what are you gonna
honestly
do?
Honestly, I feel like this album is a lot more comparable to, Everything Now, actually, because, like, I don't know, especially in how I was receiving it before it came out, I was like, oh my god, they're really trying to do something here, and they're just going to fail so spectacularly. But I don't know, like, pure comedy isn't really, like, a concept album in the way that this is, or, like, Everything Now is. Like, kind of Father John Misty, like, talks about these, like, songs about, like, the future, sort of, but they're really about the present and, like, his anxieties, and I don't know, I just don't feel like they're that comparable at all.
Yeah. I feel like the difference is that pure comedy was very direct, but this, it means as much or as little as you want to read into it.
It's unbelievably obtuse, yeah.
Depending on where you stand, you can see, like, this profound statement about The technological advancements really bloody get me in the mood. You could see everything or nothing, and that line and both interpretations are correct.
The wise man bowed his head. There is no difference between good and bad things, you idiot, you fucking moron. Anyways, I think that pretty much wraps up a lot of what this album is. Hey, Arctic Monkeys, yeah. They did that.
Fucking did that thing.
I think this was a really good discussion.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Right, that's all for the podcast tonight.
Thank you for listening, as always.
Yeah. I hope you're having a good night wherever you are.
We should have a podcast coming in ideally less than a fortnight this time.
Yeah, we're trying to do a billboard next. We're just gonna skip the catch up, I think, because every Indie Heads podcast is a catch up and it's not that fun.
Definitely. And like of the releases to catch up on, there isn't that much too significant. Except go check out the fucking DJ DS album if you like pop music. It's a good pop album. I like it a lot. Yeah. That's all I have to say. Yeah, I could say more, but I'm not going. Podcast is over.
Game push so soon.